Good evening. Is anybody feeling especially tired this evening? Yeah? No? Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. Okay.
Can you talk long?
No, I'm trying not to as well. I might just borrow some of your energy. Okay, so, yes. Any other variety of other little meditation questions? But the first thing that I want to talk to you about this evening is what's going to happen when you come out of the retreat. And those of you that have been in long retreats before, you know the sad fact that a lot of the quality of the meditations, the progress that you've made, of course, this retreat is going to start fading over the next few days. And there's some things that you can do to minimize that. One of the most important things, if you can do it, is to not just abruptly go from meditating many hours every day to meditating once a day. So if you can, for example, when you get home tomorrow, if you can do another sit or two, and then if you could manage to do the same thing the next day, this will help you to sustain the momentum that you built up for a little while. And the other thing that's really important that you do is not be attached to, you know, if you're at a particular stage in terms of your meditation the last couple of days, and when you realize by next Wednesday that you're not able to sustain that, please don't be bothered by it. All the work you did and everything you accomplished is, you know, it's real, it's there, you're not going to lose it. You just have to go back and do a little more work. That's all. Consolidate. Go back and consolidate some of the gains in your training that you've managed to accumulate in the last few days. Now, it would be very helpful when you come out of this retreat to avoid, if you can, situations that are intensely busy and highly distracting. So if you can maintain as much sort of quiet as you can, that will help a lot too. And do the same thing as a matter of fact, it's good practice for a permanent approach of whenever you have the opportunity of being mindful. You know, like I talked the other day about when you're driving, anytime you're in a quiet situation where you're not doing something that requires a lot of direct engagement, focus your attention on what you are doing and practice maintaining that expanded awareness that you have. These things will all help. One of the things that will set you, that will disrupt the calm and the clarity and the mindfulness that you have more than anything else are intensely emotional situations. So you may not have that much control over this, but to the extent that you do, for the next few days, try to ease your way back into the emotional intensity of life. Be as gentle with yourself as you can. You are going to be far more open and vulnerable to other people's emotions when you come out of this retreat than you will realize. And if you're lucky, there won't be any situations arise that make you aware of just how open you've become. But it's all the more reason to, if you can, make your re-entry to the marketplace as gradual and gentle as you can. So these are some important things to keep in mind. If you want the experiences that you've had in this meditation retreat to continue for as long as possible and to be reinvigorated by your daily sits, then this is the way to go about it. There's another thing that probably in just about everybody's mind is the intention, the inspiration to have a very regular daily practice and maybe to expand your practice beyond what it was before you came into the retreat. Is that not on your mind? That's a wonderful intention, and you have a lot of inspiration now. The time to act on that is immediately. When the retreat is over, if there's anything that you should think about, it should be how you're going to make that a reality. When you're going to do this additional practice, what extra days that you may be able to set aside in your weekly schedule or bi-weekly schedule or whatever to do a few extra sits. Make the plans, and to the extent that you can, make the arrangements to that. So think about when, where, and how you're going to make that happen while you have the inspiration. If you wait till Tuesday to do it, you're not going to have that same enthusiasm. So it's a good thing to start thinking about on your way home is how you're going to make these wonderful good intentions that you have into a reality. Okay? Good. So should I look and see if there's any other meditation questions that are important enough to deal with? Okay. Okay. I'm starting to notice that there seems to be some intentional aspect to my breathing as I meditate on the breath. How do I let go of this? Can you talk about breathing and intention? This may be coming from deliberate control of the breath in yoga practice. Okay, so, yeah. I think I might have spoken to this earlier, but I'll repeat it again.
You did? She says you did speak about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's worth reminding you again. If you notice that your breath seems to be changed in order to make it easier for you to follow, don't automatically claim the credit or blame for that, because there are unconscious processes that in response to your intention to follow the breath closely, will alter the breath in a way to maybe make it easier to observe. And the important thing, and if you notice that, that's the most important thing. But realize, you can ask yourself the question, and the answer should be obvious. Was it deliberate? Or was it some automatic, unconscious, unintended change that you're observing? And if so, then you don't need to make a conscious, intentional, deliberate change to make it more natural. Because if you think about it, you can't really do that. You're doing exactly what you don't want to do. Just satisfy yourself that it really is coming from some other part of your mind rather than the part that's thinking, oh, if I only breathe a little longer, a little stronger, a little whatever, that it'll be easier to follow the breath. And try to be the passive observer. But the passive observer can notice that there are other parts of your mind altering the breath. Now, if you've done practices in yoga or elsewhere that lead you, that involve deliberately controlling your breath, then that can be the source of it. Yes. Especially if you spent hours over years of deliberately controlling your breath, a lot of that is going to have become automatic. But the same thing applies. If you're not intending to do it right now, just noticing that it's happening is probably going to be enough to make it happen less. You don't have to try to stop it from happening. You could just notice that it's happening. Be aware of the fact that you prefer the breathing just to be as natural as it can. And let that fall away as quickly or as slowly as it falls away. And for as long as it's unintentionally, if you're slipping into the habit of doing some kind of pranayama, it's all right, as long as it's a habit and as long as you recognize it and don't have the intention to continue it, then you can let it take care of itself. So hopefully that's pretty clear. I know I didn't talk about this before, but this is a recent question, so somebody needed to be reminded. Please describe how subtle distraction differs from gross distraction. I am currently meditating at stage 4 or 5 and would like to know which distraction I can safely ignore for now.
Jesse answered that one yesterday.
Oh, did I?
Jesse.
Jesse did. Oh, yes. Right. Okay. I think actually, that's right. Related to this, he answered it, but apparently there was a sense of a little bit of lack of clarity associated with it. Yes, he did answer that. It sounds like we aren't meant to suppress any thoughts or feelings, just to keep them in peripheral awareness, unless we focus on them when they're strong. This came up last night during Jesse's talk on purification, but at stage 6, is ignoring the subtle distractions until the sub-mind stop presenting them, another form of suppressing emotions or thoughts, or keeping them compartmentalized. Yes. Yes, this is the point that could stand a bit of clarification. When you're having a subtle distraction, it means your attention is alternating with the distraction. It's actually moving back and forth between the meditation object and the distraction. But it's spending most of the time on the meditation object. And until stage 6, You know that's happening, but you don't mind that that's happening. You let it happen. You just don't let the frequency of alternating attention become greater. You, from stage four on, you're interested in keeping subtle distraction from becoming gross distraction. And that's the extent to which you're trying to influence the existence of subtle distraction, is not have them become gross distraction. Even though you know that attention is still alternating with them, you let them be there. Now, what you're doing in stage six is you're not trying to suppress the subtle distraction. What you're doing is, this is now for the first time, and really it's at this point that you have the ability to do this, is you're trying to stop these subtle alternations of attention. So you're not doing anything to the distraction as a distraction, but you are exerting a little more intentional control over movements of attention. You now want to stop attention from going to those distractions. So you see, you're not suppressing them. You're allowing them to be there. And they can be there in peripheral awareness. And if they don't stand out from peripheral awareness, from everything else in peripheral awareness, then it means they're not getting any alternating attention. So that's all you're trying to do. Not suppress them, because they're still going to be there. But they actually won't qualify as distractions anymore once they don't receive any attention. Because we define a distraction as something in peripheral awareness that is competing with the breath for attention. So once the competition stops, it's no longer a distraction. Right? So there's no more subtle distraction. But those things still may be appearing in peripheral awareness. Now, what does happen, and you're particularly interested in this happening with thoughts and emotions and mental objects, is that these are by far the most powerful distractions that occur. And so they're the ones that you want to deny attention to first and most completely. So what happens when you deny these mental objects attention consistently enough, long enough, then those sub-minds that keep throwing these ideas up into peripheral awareness, they still stop doing that as often. You see, you haven't suppressed them. You've just ignored them. Ignored them in the sense of denying them attention, to the point that those unconscious parts of your mind where these thoughts are originating are just, they're basically resigning themselves to the fact that it's not worth the bother to keep trying. Although you give them the slightest opening and they'll be back again. And an example that I've used to illustrate this is a parent with several young children who's trying to do something that's important, and the kids want attention. And they keep making up excuses to come and attract attention. You know. And rather than getting mad at them and kicking them out of the house or something like that, which would be more or less what suppressing a distraction would be, if you can have the patience to just ignore them enough, then when they realize that they're not going to get the attention they're looking for, they go off and entertain themselves for a while. Of course, at the slightest opportunity, they come back and try again. But anybody that's had children can see the analogy. So it's really very much the same sort of thing that's going on in your mind. There's these different parts of your mind. And of course, they think that these thoughts and emotions and ideas and so forth are really important. So they want them to get attention. But then ignore them long enough and they get kind of bored, stop trying. At least until I see another opening. So that's what you're doing. So you never at any point are you suppressing. And when we use the word ignore, could translate that as deny them attention. But you're not attempting to keep something from entering peripheral awareness. And sort of the mechanics of how the mind works. Things appear in consciousness first in peripheral awareness. And then may or may not become an object of attention. And so to the degree that they get attention, they continue to appear in peripheral awareness. They continue to be there. And to the degree that they don't become your main object of attention, then they keep trying. So you're just working with that kind of understanding of how the mind works. Deny them attention. And you would have noticed this by now, I'm sure, with thoughts, that however much attention a thought gets, it tends to persist. But if a thought arises in peripheral awareness and it gets no attention at all, it arrives with a certain amount of energy, but not enough to last for very long, and it tends to fade away. May come back again. But thoughts that don't get attention, they don't get fed, then they disappear again. So that's what you're doing. So hopefully that clarifies that difference. You're never suppressing. You can't suppress things from entering peripheral awareness. As a matter of fact, if you think you are, you're actually giving them a kind of energy by trying to deny them. And so rather than them disappearing on their own, they'll just, you know, it gets to be a struggle, but it's still giving them energy. And it's still costing you, because the attempt to suppress something means that you're engaged with it. So. Okay. About inner limbs. I'll just address that very briefly. Would you speak more specifically about the inner limbs and if there's a potential for harming oneself if the prana was misdirected or misunderstood in meditation? I ask because in yoga that is the case. Let's see, I've never had a lot of experience with actually working with that inner energy, because in the tradition that I was trained in, it's just one of those things that happen. And the usual instruction, I actually give you much more instruction on working with it, and making some use of it, than is traditionally done, as I say, in the tradition that I was trained in. And in most cases, just letting it be there and letting it resolve itself, eventually it manifests as just a powerful joy, the mental state of joy. And the disturbing sensations associated with the initial arising of this joy, which is what you experience as these inner limbs, that goes away. And you're just left with the joy. And that corresponds with the arising of mental, of physical pliancy. You actually reach a state where you have both physical and mental pliancy, and pretty well all ordinary awareness of body sensations fades, the mind is withdrawn from the senses, and you're very aware of the joy, and all the energy that once was felt in your body is now really experienced mentally. But there are occasionally people who experience these energies in a very powerful way that can be quite disruptive and painful, perhaps harmful. I don't know. I haven't had a personal experience with somebody who I know of was actually harmed by these energies. But my approach, since I'm not an expert on working with them, you know, I have some advice that I can give to somebody when they're dealing with some difficulties in this, because you can move these energies through attention, and often that's the best way to deal with them. You experience blockages in the flow of these energies, then you can, through focusing your attention and through the intention to facilitate the movement of the energy, you can often release those blocks and you can move the energy through them. And that's about as far as I consider myself qualified to advise people on dealing with particularly strong pranic energies. If it's a problem and the techniques that I suggest aren't enough, then I suggest that they go see somebody who's more used to working with these. I found people who people with yoga, people who Kundalini especially. I mean, that's basically, this is the same energy we're talking about. And when it gets released in a really powerful form physically, you know, then somebody that's trained in these other methods, they know much better ways to deal with them than I do. And so I would refer to somebody who's has expertise in yoga, particularly Kundalini yoga or Qigong or Tai Chi or something like this, where they're used to a lot more practical ways of dealing with these energies. And so, is there a potential for harming yourself? I don't know, but I wouldn't want to take the chance. But if it's becoming a serious problem, then I would back away from the specific kinds of practices that are producing all this intensity, and I would seek out somebody who knows more about this and get some assistance from them. Likewise, another question. Could you speak to how chakras come to play in meditation? If they do, you mentioned prana flowing in specific directions. Also, should you comment on our interconnectedness and chakras? Once again, there are very elaborate systems of describing these energies and of working with them. And of course, the chakras, that's one of the descriptions by people who paid a lot of attention to these. My knowledge and experience of this is limited to the fact that when the energy currents start to move, yeah, you know for sure, if you never did before, what these chakras are about. You know, you experience them as part of it. Likewise, you know, the Chinese systems of describing the movements of qi. These are all systems that have gone much more deeply into this than I have personally. And so for the answers to those kind of questions and how to use these things and the significance of them, then I'd suggest you find the answers from somewhere else. What I know is that those energy flows and those chakras that you see on those traditional diagrams, that you will experience them yourself. You'll know what they're talking about. And there are all kinds of interesting and productive ways of working with them. I've just never gotten into that. And as far as the relationship between chakras and the interconnectedness of us all, you know, there are things about piti, joy, and this energy phenomenon that I'm curious about, but I don't know too much about. But I know that definitely this has something to do with the interconnectedness of us. And I've had the experience myself, you know, when I've had the kind of energy crashes, which actually I had today in the middle of our earlier talk. I don't know if any of you noticed that you might have. But I've had those experiences where a friend of mine who's very much into working with chi has done chi transfers. He actually transfers the chi from his own body into mine, and I feel it, and it's like a powerful transfusion of energy. I was doing a weekend teaching in California one time, and I just totally crashed, and I was supposed to show up at this place an hour later and start talking, and he did this thing, and it was just incredible. So I know it has something to do with the way that we're interconnected and it can be transferred between us. I have noticed in myself, you know, just due to the energy problems that I've experienced as a part of this Lyme disease, and not just the Lyme disease, some of it's a reaction to the treatments that I'm taking and things like that. The happiness and energy, you know, it's when you've got energy, you're happy. And when you're happy, you've got energy. You know, the state of mind that we call joy is really all about energy in the mind. And I even use an analogy to describe unification of mind. The unified mind is the natural state of a unified mind is joy. And as the mind becomes unified, the state of joy arises. During the process of unification, there's a lot of energy comes up, but at first it's not well channeled. It just goes all over the place. It's very turbulent, can be disruptive and painful and so forth, which is what I was talking about a few minutes ago. And so a metaphor that I use to describe what I think is happening, you have all these different parts of your mind, all with different ideas of what's the best way to fulfill the collective needs and desires and intentions. So if you can imagine a bunch of horses all tethered together, but all wanting to go in a different direction, and a tremendous amount of energy is expended, but the amount of movement that actually takes place in any one direction isn't very much, right? And then as the mind starts to become more unified, as more and more parts of the mind start to work in harmony based on shared intentions, it's like you've now got increasing numbers of these horses tied together in this big bunch who are trying to go in the same direction. So you're getting a lot more movement now, but it's still pretty chaotic. You know, it's like the herd starts to take off in this direction, but all of a sudden, no, it's going back the other way, and then no, it's going somewhere else. And, you know, and sometimes some of the weaker horses trip and they get dragged. That's kind of what I think is happening when, as the mind becomes unified, we experience all this energy coming up that's rather chaotic and not so wonderful. But then, you know what happens when all the horses are going in the same direction at the same time. You've got all that horsepower available to do whatever needs to be done. And that's the direction you're wanting to go. So there is this very, very important, very key, very fundamental relationship between unification of mind and the mental state of joy and energy, both energy in a form that is useful and empowering, and energy that's just kind of chaotic and turbulent. And the other thing that I've noticed is just the joy and the happiness that is almost inevitable when there's more energy, you know, and how when there's little energy, you know, you could even be, you could describe yourself as happy, but it's just nothing like what it is when there's energy present. Very interesting thing. So maybe some of you will have the opportunity to explore those particular aspects in a greater depth than I have, and you can come back and tell the rest of us what you discover. One of my personal projects has been for a while now to try to understand better the nature of the process by which energy and information gets exchanged between individual minds. And I sense that this is the direction that I have to look in order to find those answers. I mean, what I'm looking for is some kind of explanation that I can put in words and concepts to help other people understand it. To experience it happening is one thing, but to be able to create a conceptual model to describe what's happening is something altogether different. So. There is really no end to this process of exploration and discovery. There are just limits to the capabilities that we have. So. Some other things that I'd love to talk about, but I don't think is really the time. And beautiful ideas, one about music. That's a great topic. I'd love to talk about it more. Using meditation to explore creative thinking. That would be a good one to talk about. I did address that a little bit one of the evenings in Cape Ann last week, that in meditation you do open yourself up to an enormous amount of creativity. Some people were concerned that maybe through meditation that they would lose their creative spark, but it's quite the opposite. Yeah, I think we'll have to let it go with that. Okay. So the bell already rang, and we're already into one of the final meditation periods of this retreat. And I very much wanted to do a guided meditation with you. And I'm just trying to decide if, in the energy state that I'm in right now, if it's an appropriate thing to do or not. but I would very much like to do it.
I'd like to encourage you to rest.
What's that?
I'd like to encourage you to rest.
Me too.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think that would probably be the wisest thing to do.
Yes.
So, I say thank you very much. Good night.
Okay, maybe tomorrow morning.
What's that?
Tomorrow morning. The meditation guided, maybe?
Listen, we'll see. We'll have to let tomorrow morning take care of itself.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, so I'll see you tomorrow morning. And enjoy the rest of your evening soon. I hope you all sleep well. And thank you once again. Thank you.